Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again. And Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today on my own again, and I'm joined by the Motherwell Head of Fan Relations, Ryan Murn. Welcome along, mate.
Thank you.
Well, it's possibly been quite a whirlwind introduction to your time at Fir Park, a couple of months in the job now. Firstly, welcome to the podcast and thanks for agreeing to come on. And secondly, how are you finding it so far?
Thanks for the welcome. I'm finding it so far that the cliche cold is rife amongst Hamilton and Motherwell, I think. But away from the weather, the club is a good club. It's the thing that attracted me to the... I'm in danger of sounding like a footballer here, but the thing that attracted me to the club was just the way that it is quite a community club, and it's very orientated towards the fans, even more so now. I've known Alan Burrows for a few years, and we chatted a couple of years ago about, you know, opportunities, you know, that were possibly available, and we kept in touch, you know, ever since. So when Alan called me you know, about coming up, it was I got up here, had a chat to him, and we spoke about his plans for the club, the things that the World Society were, you know, were aiming towards, and it's a good place to be. The club's going, clubs need supporters. No matter how big or arrogant clubs try and be, they need the supporters to drive them forward and to move them forward. And I think that's where Motherwell are very, very realistic. And something that stands out for me is how fan orientated they are. And that's coming from the top, which is vitally important. So any changes that we do make should always be, you know, supporter led. So it's a massive positive and a really exciting time to be here. And possibly the longest answer you've ever had to one question on the podcast.
No, absolutely not. We've had some very long ones, particularly from our previous owner, Les Hutchinson, it must be said. But obviously, being based down south initially, were you aware of the work that was going on here in terms of trying to engage the supporters, the takeover of the Welsh Society, or the work towards taking over the Welsh Society had? It's kind of hard to know what the perception is of Scottish football. Well, we know what the perception is of Scottish football down south, but what kind of knowledge they've got of teams, given that, despite not being one of the bigger teams in the top flight of Scottish football, we have been kind of, for want of a better expression, punching above our weight and finishing well, playing in Europe and stuff like that. So were we on the radar?
I think from a personal, I mean, overall, I don't know how many clubs would, or how many supporters would know, you know, about what Motherwell are trying to do, because people down south, you know, just see the big two, I think, or the big one and a half, depending on how you look at it. But I think from a personal point of view, I mean, I've always been aware because of, you know, my relationship with Alan. And, you know, we've always often spoken about, you know, through social media or phone calls or whatever about things that clubs are doing for the fans. And so from a personal point of view, I've always been aware of what's going on. And like I said, that's what is so attractive about working here, is that it is, it's, you know, as much as the fans will be disappointed with results, and that's inevitable, whatever team, you know, whatever team you support, whether that be, you know, look at Arsenal fans. Arsenal fans are devastated that they haven't done anything for a few years, but for the last, I think they've spent the equivalent of something like 9 years in fourth place or something like that. But here it's just, it is the fans, you know, and the, you know, the people at the club that want to drive things forward. And I think that's where, from a personal point of view, that this club will succeed in, you know, budgets and things like that. Celtic and Rangers are always going to be way, way ahead of everyone else, and that's evident through, you know, 12-0 wins every week. Yeah. But here it's there's some wins that we can have, and we're not after, you know, stealing Celtic fans or Rangers fans, but we can build on the community feel here and penetrate the community within, you know, within Motherwell and the surrounding areas, and win supporters that way, or encourage people to come that way, and that's where we are stand out from you know, from the big two and the areas. We can affect our community probably better than they can, because they rely on a bigger worldwide fan base almost. Where we are purely just about Motherwell and the surrounding areas, and that's where I think this club moving forward can make some big wins.
We'll move on a bit later on and talk about things like the recent survey and things like that. But you arrive at the club at a time where attendances across the board are falling. People are perhaps getting a bit disengaged with Scottish football. Maybe it's because of the Celtic domination for many years, the increased prices of tickets, sometimes treatment at certain away stadiums. There's as football fans, it's not very hard to kind of upset us, but at times I think quite a lot of the gripes and the complaints are quite legitimate and quite justified. So how big a role is it for you to kind of try and A, work out these gripes and understand these gripes, and then take them forward and try and improve, particularly the match day experience? After the longest answer, this is the longest question. There's things like the ice hockey, the Brayhead Clan, who have done fantastically well in the last 4 or 5 years, the Glasgow Warriors rugby, the Scottish Rocks basketball. There's sporting clubs that are now competing with football as well, and they're legitimate competitors. So there's so much on, and with these gripes that football fans have got just now, it's a huge task for you, isn't it, to kind of re-engage these supporters?
Yeah, I think so. And I think football, you know, doesn't help itself a lot of the time. There are certain legislations that the club and every other club has to follow that we can't, you know, get round. You know, the typical example of one is, you know, Anfield the other week. You got people watching rugby league drinking a pint of beer, and 24 hours prior to that, you've got someone that isn't allowed past, you know, a student in a yellow jacket, with a soft drink, without a top on their soft drink, and you think that's how ridiculous, you know, legislation, you know, can sometimes be. But that's there, and that doesn't help football, you know, in many ways. I think the cost of football survey that came out a while ago, I mean, that has positives, and I know that Alan and other clubs have been one that have had to work really closely with the, you know, with the governing bodies and with the press to make sure a positive message is put out there. But that, things like that don't help. That's all about costs. And now, cost of football is expensive. Going to the cinema is expensive, but when you go to the cinema, you're watching a film in an environment that the director wants you to watch the film in. You know what you're getting every single time you go. With football, you know, we've got a set of circumstances that we can't control. The cost, yes, we can control, but I don't necessarily always think it's about cost. I think it's about value for money, more than anything. What else do the club offer on top of the match? The catering, you know, the whole experience. There are things in there that we can control, and that's where I think that's where I think football does suffer, because there are clubs out there, not this one, that just want to take your money and run, and they will do forever more. And there are clubs that sell out and will continue to do that because they can. I mean, I'm quite open that I'm a football fan. My team's Leicester, so last year we had an unbelievable season and one that no fan could ever, be annoyed with if it ever happened again. But I watched a game this season, and Leicester played Arsenal and it cost me £40 for my seat. 2 weeks later we played Swansea at home, exactly the same seat, cost me £32. And that's, that's ludicrous. They're in a position where they're going to sell out every week regardless of what they charge. But it's bringing it back here, it is about the value for money and what else the club can offer. And I guess that crosses over into the survey a little bit. And that's why we need to understand what supporters do want. And the fact that the club want the fans to shape the club is a massive positive. Because I have ideas of what I think needs improving. You can see it's evident. And not just physical things behind the scenes that we can do that can help us talk to fans and communicate with the fans and supporters. And those things will be changed. But we need supporters to guide us, because I don't believe it is all about the money that it costs to come, because I believe there are supporters out there, and again, at every single club, and probably a small minority, that if I paid them £50 to come to a game, some would want 60. And that's the reality of it. And for clubs, like Motherwell, unless you can guarantee a 1-0 win every week, or until you can guarantee a 1-0 win every week, you need a plan. You need something to make, to make the difference. And again, that is where I do believe that moving forwards we can stand out from other clubs, to make it a better place to come, really, for supporters, because that is 100% within our control. And there is a guy crossing over into other sports in America, a guy called Pete Weinmiller, which there couldn't be a more American name if he tried, I don't think. But he's the president of the Oklahoma Thunder basketball team, and he said something in a seminar, and he came out and he said, we can't control the purchased product, which was basketball, so we must focus 100% of our efforts on the fan experience. And that, to me, is something I've always, since I've worked in football, always stood by, because it is true that nothing I do can affect, people in that survey have come and expressed opinions on the manager or on the players, and I think there's nothing I can do about that. There's nothing.
It almost feels like a kind of waste of the idea, or not getting the idea, which I suppose, again, is something we've talked about the survey in the podcast before, and you're very active in social media explaining it. I don't kind of understand why personal gripes on the playing surface, because people know that is not.
Yeah, and I think that is a very, very, very small minority of people. There has been some wonderful, wonderful feedback in that survey. But it's just on those things that we can't control. But there are so much that we can control, and that is, again, where we have to, going back to that quote, that's where we have to focus every single effort, is on those things that we can control. And I think, there are other sports out there, there are, other sports clubs that you mentioned there that do things better than us. And we'll probably continue to be better for a while, until we can improve things here. But I also believe that we have a product in football that is more unique than any other sport. Nobody goes out and gets any other sport on a product. We compete against a cinema every week. We compete against Nando's every week. But no one's going to go out and get a Showcase cinema or a View cinema or a Starbucks tattoo or something like that. But they're going to, football is a product that is so, so unique, and people will come despite losing every week or despite not winning every week. And there sometimes is the theory that football is crap, but it's your crap. And there is that mentality. I don't think a lot of other sports have that. And that's why I believe that if we improve things here off the pitch, we will win fans back 100%. But what we have to do is to make it better here first, rather than trying to conquer too much at once. We have to make it better for every single person that comes here. And if that's a smaller audience, then so be it. We can only work with what we've got. And then from there, I think that, you know, the attendance should grow. It'll be very, very slow. But that's what we have to focus on, is the people that are coming here and making it better for them.
Do you think football clubs have perhaps been guilty of relying on blind loyalty? There was even a point recently, if I related to myself, where I was stood at the Inverness game. It was a miserable night. The team aren't playing well. You go to the toilets, there's no hot water. There's just there's no hot water for a coffee. It's just grim, and you kind of think, I've committed to a season, so I've got the whole season to look forward to. Is it going to be like this? And you kind of get back to the pub after the game, and you see a lot of people that you used to see around you in the stands, and they're not going because they're not interested, they're disappointed about the result and everything else, but they're kind of saying, well, it's been like this for so long.
Yeah,
that must be a hard kind of perception to shift as well. Yeah. And I suppose that's when you say it's going to be slow. That's the reason why, because people kind of experience the bad side of it, and then it's very hard to shift their opinion from that.
Yeah, it is. And this is, you know, something I think the thing that supporters need to know is that with Alan Burrows, in the role that he is so, so passionate about changing things, and he wouldn't be bringing into someone to do this if everything was perfect. He's very open to that. But what fans need to know is that Alan is so, so passionate about making things better, and now he has a resource there to help, you know, to help in me, to help him and help the club, you know, move forward and solve those problems. And some of those are, you know, some of those, you know, it is, you know, unacceptable not to have hot water if there's not a valid reason. That's something that, you know, I had a couple of people raise that issue. So I spoke to the powers that be here, and hopefully that will be resolved, or perhaps they didn't know and it's just bringing it to our attention. Nothing like that, you know, is deliberate, and the club don't set out to say, well, let's give them cold water today, obviously. But there are little things like that that do make a big difference, because, you know, if you're getting gubbed at home and it's freezing cold, a lot of things come to your attention. If you're winning that game 3-0, it's not such a problem. But believe me, if we lose a game, the complaints you get are higher.
As you can imagine.
And rightly so. But it's just that those little attentions and details are something that we're trying to work on. You know, from my own point of view, from a marketing point of view, We're working quite hard now to try and give the advertising in the stadium, you know, a facelift, the branding around the ground a facelift. And again, that's something that Alan is massively passionate about, because we have a product here that people love and we want people to be proud of. And we know we're not going to win 3-0 every week, so we need to make it a better place, you know, for people to come, and something that you can all be proud of, because that it's your club. That's what we want. And you know, we're in control of making it better, so that's what we need to do. And we can't do everything. We can't go and build a new ground, you know, on the back of a couple of complaints. But there are so many little things that we can do that can help improve things. And it is, I just think sometimes if football's not great, then things bother people more. And people are right to, you know, that's why I wanted to set up the supporter service email address, or supporter services email address, just so people can, you know, just feed into us, because there are things that you'll see on a match day that I won't see. I'll see our posters in the right places, are the poster sites full, you know, and things like that. But there's stuff that you're going to see that we don't know about. So fans are right to raise it, and if, you know, if we don't correct it, then they have every single right to keep bugging us until we do correct things. And that's what we need. You know, nobody expects everything to be 100% positive, and it's great that we do a lot of things right, because the club do. But equally, we need the feedback on the negative stuff so we can improve stuff. And the nature of the beast is when those things are improved, there'll be other things that people want improving. But that's a good place to be in.
Yeah, and I completely can resonate with what you're saying with the negative results bringing kind of more negativity. We quite often can record a podcast in the back of a win and be 45 minutes. Podcast in the back of a defeat tends to be a lot more to talk about. You possibly need something negative to actually to talk about sometimes.
But yeah.
The point that you raised there about it being our club, and I must have met when you came in, and there was a bit of confusion amongst quite a few people said, well, we're a fan-owned club. Why do we need someone to engage with the fans? Is that mm-hmm. not the job of the Welsh Society? But I thought it was quite interesting that you mentioned the kind of the work that you're doing with the Welsh Society just now. And it seems as well that you can't have the society dealing with issues like fan experience to a certain extent. They've got another part of the club to run. Yeah. So is it all quite closely intertwined?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I sit with Alan and the Welsh Society, you know, as regular as we need to. Obviously, there's the big change that's happened that, you know, we've met on that on a couple of occasions just to try and set those boundaries, because we also need fans to be clear on who's doing what and not to be thinking, you know, I've got 10 options of who do I go to, where do I run? And from my point of view, you know, my job here is to, you know, is the marketing and the, you know, and the fan engagement side. That isn't just, you know, club led. That's working with, you know, with the Welsh Society and also with the, you know, with the Community Trust as well. That's where my remit falls. And there are things I'm closer to the business than, you know, every single day. So there are things that I can help with that probably the you know, the society will need support on. But also the society are better off dealing with society issues than I am, because that's, you know, that's their remit and that's their bag. But, you know, they all come hand in hand. The survey that we've done is purely, it's purely a society and a club thing. It's not just a club thing. It's not just a society thing. It's the two working together to make things better, which sounds the most David Brent thing I've said on here. But
I don't know, because we had Craig Hughes and Tom Feely on the other week, and kind of the message, I suppose it was, that was the kind of the final thing that Tom said, that we need to kind of realise that the club and the society are now the one thing.
Yeah.
They merged the Swindon lot together with the... But that's obviously a massive thing, that that everyone sees it as the one entity, and perhaps in the past, I think particularly there was a stage where the society stagnated, and they're quite open in the fact that happened. But now this is the time to kind of push on and kind of sing about the stuff that's good and fix the things that are kind of struggling or failing.
100%. And that's the thing that I think the club, that was one of my observations, you know, with the club as well. As I said to you know, Alan Burrows, this club do so many things right, so many. And so many things that clubs in England would like to be able to do, like, you know, things like kind of match day, like the signing zone and things like that. That's so unique. Not many clubs would allow that, because their players are perceived to need wrapping up in bubble wrap and, you know, and won't talk to the public unless they really have to. And to have something like that is unbelievable. And there's so many things that this club do. And one of my observations is shout about the things that you do well, because fans want to know, fans want to be proud of the club, and the club, you know, the club should be telling people how, you know, about the good things, because there are the negatives that will get picked up and are often spoke about more than the positives. And this club, you know, do so many good things. You know, the calendar signing last night was a typical example of that. We've come off the back of a 3-0 defeat and had the biggest or the most successful calendar signing to date.
Absolutely incredible, we were kind of clock watching towards the end, because people just continued to turn up. I turned up at Fir Park at 6 o'clock and there were people queuing in the street. But again, in the same token, a hell of a lot of credit has to go to the players as well for...
Yeah.
Not anybody that I noticed wasn't there. Everyone fronted up, everyone signed every calendar, every bit of paper put in front of them, selfies, everything else. And these guys are a credit to the club as well, and obviously being massive assets, the kids were delighted. It was such a well-run night, and so pleasing to see so many people turn up.
Yeah, and I think, again, that's something that, you know, that the club and the society have to be proud of, and are proud of, because, like I said, those players, I've worked with players in the past who are absolute divas, and you know, 10 minutes before something's due to end, they'll be ready to get in the car and go, and completely missing the point of why they're there. And in some ways, you're better off without them being there. But things like that last night to me show that there's a fan base here that, you know, want, that are proud of the club, that want to do things with the club, and and you know, to have people complaining about mentioning parking, you know, parking problems on a Monday night at a calendar signing is unbelievable, and that's credit to, you know, to Alan for setting something like that up, and you know, and the people that have made it a success in the past. That it just keeps building and building and building, and the players, you know, going back to, you know, the previous question about negativity, that there are clubs like this and like you know, Doncaster Rovers, where I worked previously, where Doncaster Rovers went 17 games without a win, got relegated, but we won Family Club of the Year. And I think that, to me, proves that if you're doing things right for the fans, the relegation obviously hurt a lot of people, and isn't the family club doesn't make up for the award, doesn't make up for the relegation. But it just, if you could, going back to the, you know, the controlling the right thing, if you control the right things off the pitch, you can still make a difference despite results. And I think that last night, to me, you know, I went home, you know, buzzing off the back of something like that, because it shows that the club is going in the right direction, and the fans are ready to, or are still engaging with it, and that is something that the society and the club need to build on, and just keep talking to supporters, because without that and without transparency, you know, you can't grow. And going back to the point about the club and the society being one thing, that is again down to the two parties as one, to then start communicating with the club about, well, sorry, with the supporters about, you know, next steps and things like that, which is something that we met on last week. So again, communication should come out that help supporters, you know, understand a little bit more about things, because I know there's been some confusion with, you know, with my role, and am I an SLO, and am I this or whatever. But yeah, again, it's just down to communications and the club, you know, continuing to put out the right messages and stuff. So,
well, that takes us on nicely. That was a seamless link almost to the SLOs with the, which again is something that there's been many kind of organisations linked to the football club, like the Well Trust. There's mm-hmm. been there was a Muddle Forever. There's been many kind of, almost felt like committees to serve committees. The SLOs seems to kind of be derived from the kind of European football, and it seems to be very successful as well, from what I've read up on. What is your visions in terms of having SLOs at Motherwell, and how do you go about implementing such a thing?
The default that clubs that don't have that European model have is to put people like me in charge of being an SLO or in the role of an SLO, which is fine to an extent, but my personal opinion is that people like me can only ever be supporter service, or that's all you can be. You can't be anyone. I'm not gonna challenge the club to an extent where I risk losing my job, because that's what feeds me and feeds my family. And so from a supporter service side, I'll continue to do everything I can to help, you know, to help supporters, as well everyone at this club. But from an SLO point of view, it's not that an SLO has to be confrontational, but an SLO, in my opinion, has to be a fan of the club, has to be able to go to games, has to be in a place where they're respected by supporters or by supporter groups, and has to be, you know, quite professional about the whole thing, and be in touch with people like Alan Marshall, and be in touch with the police, and be in touch with the other clubs, SLOs, because they're there to support. Well, as the title says, they are liaison officers, and they need to be on the terraces helping supporters where need be. The European model, a lot of clubs out there have ex-hooligans or people that have been in, I say firms necessarily, but people that have been notorious troublemakers that are then, you know, have seen the light and decided they want to help the club. And what I think clubs have to remember is that the German models, the European models, are years, years ahead of where we are. And you know, and we, especially as a club, are just starting, and that's something again that the World Society want to drive, and the club want to, you know, to drive forwards. And my visions for that are that I would like us to have probably four SLOs that represent different parts of the ground. I think the Well Boys need their own representative because of the, you know, of the carnival type fan that they are. And you know, they don't want some doofus in a suit like me trying to tell them or help, you know, help them. It needs to be relevant. You know, we need to have probably someone that can work with the family side and the disabled side, and also someone that you know, can work with the other you know, types of fan that we've got.
Yeah, so maybe so many different demographics, hasn't
yeah, there? and we have to be sensitive towards that. Some clubs just have one, and that's fine. But my belief and Alan's belief is that we have to have people that are representative to every single group, and because they are there to, you know, to help the fans on a match day. Now, 9 out of 10 times, it's just going to be, oh, where, especially away games, or where do I see this, or where do I get that, and that kind of stuff's fine. But if there's anything that's a little bit more heated or they need more support on, we have to have someone that's relevant to the group. So we're working with, you know, Supporters Direct to make sure that we put the right things in place. We've got a recruitment strategy that I had hoped to have it, you know, rolled out by now, but we haven't managed to do that yet. But we've got another meeting on it tomorrow, actually, where we just got to sort of dot the I's and cross the T's. That's the right way, isn't it? And you know, and just put some more plans in place, just so we can you know, recruit the right people in there and do it the right way. We don't necessarily want the same old faces, you know, coming forward. We want to reach out to every single fan out there. We'll put out a job spec. We'll put out the level of commitment needed, and we want people, you know, people will be encouraged to apply, and then they'll go through an interview process with ourselves and with external parties, because I think that's important. That can help us then recruit the right people for the, you know, for those roles. And we're not going to rush it. If we haven't got the right people, we'll wait. But the end goal, I believe, would be what I want, and the passion and the desire is to have the best SLOs out there. I don't believe SLOs should ever be paid or work for the club. That's my own opinion. But they need to be supporters that can stand independently and challenge the club where necessary, and also educate supporters where necessary as well, because it's not always the club's fault. You know, think there's a lot of legislation out there that if someone in a suit and tie like me is trying to tell a supporter, they might understand it a little bit better if it comes from someone that is, you know, that they see every week on the terrace. And I think that's important. They can help the club break down boundaries, and they can form a, you know, a conduit between the club and the supporters as well. That I think again is massive in us helping in trying to, you know, change the club and change the face of the club, really. And that's something that we had at, I'm going to get a slap if I mention Doncaster Rovers again from Alan Burrows. At Donny this, at Donny that. But at Doncaster, they had a model that was bang on. They had three SLOs there. They had one guy that was more naughty than the others in the past. They had someone that was probably more club orientated, and someone in the middle, and it worked really, really well. And they were very, very active in helping the club and in the supporters, and they would liaise with, you know, away teams, away stewards, away police, or whoever it may be, just to make sure that supporters, when they arrived at away grounds, were, you know, heading in the right direction, could go to the right pubs, knew where to go, they were greeted on arrival, and it just made the experience, you know, less confrontational, because if you arrive there, there's no support, and you're faced with a sea of yellow jackets, then
yeah,
you can get more confrontation than you need, and we don't want that. No one wants that, and that's where I think having the right people in those SLO roles can really, really help the club.
Yeah, so is that the kind of thing that you envisaged they would be involved in and represent the supporters, or is there kind of no real scope to or limits to what they can get involved in, or that, is it fan experiences?
I think from the, sorry, go on.
No, on you go.
No, I think from the SLO's role, it's more stuff on the match day.
Yeah.
You know, itself is being there to, you know, to help, or in the build up to games. I've seen SLOs, you know, used quite actively just to, you know, on social media is a massive thing, because they can help they can help educate supporters that don't know how to, you know, contact away fans coming here. They can be actively talking to them as much as we can, and to an extent they are an extension of the club. But I think on a match day operation that's when they come into their own. But they need to be involved in the meetings that, you know, that we go to before games, so they understand you know, the categorisation of games. They understand, you know, where fans can be, what they can do, where they can't go, and things like that. So I think in the build up to games, you know, they are massive, and they, you know, maybe not from the marketing side, they're probably not so involved in that, but just more from the operational in being a helping hand, if that isn't too Americanized and English, you know, and that sort of friendly face of the club as well, and to help people like me, to help Alan Marshall and Alan Burrows, you know, just talk to fans and help them out on match days, is definitely where they'll come into their own.
Yeah, and then that, I suppose that does kind of let a lot of other people take not such a step back and kind of reduce their responsibility, but it does take a lot of the strain off, because you can't be in 100 different places at once as well. Yeah. It kind of just makes things.
And it also works the other way, you know. There was a situation at an away game a couple of years ago at Doncaster where the police were contacting the SLOs. There was some potential trouble. There was a steward that was out of order, and the police went to our SLO and sort of said, "Look, this is a situation," and managed to, I think they calmed it down completely, but managed to, you know, to take the strain out of it, and
yeah,
they let our SLO there talk to the supporter to calm him down, rather than it be a, you know, a policeman or a steward. And I think that's where it can. It's not all about confrontation, but that's where they can really, really help, because that's something that you know, me sat in the stands or in the media box, where it may be, you can't help with that on a match day, and that's where they can, you know, they can help, because it just works both ways. The police and the away safety safety guys, they need to know who they are as well, and you know, I think they should always be on the end of a radio when they're here, as in, you know, and like an extension of the stewarding team, I guess. But again, just a friendlier face that I know for a fact, if I was at a Leicester game and the SLOs there were maybe branded up, but you know, maybe branded up in an SLO jacket or something, you're more likely to go to them than you are to a steward initially, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I've completely lost my train of thought there. Yes, a big other factor of the matchday experience here has been, and it's one of my biggest bugbears, I've gone about it almost constantly, is how poor the bar facilities are around the ground. We've got two massive facilities. I know one used for hospitality, but a pretty vast space up there that could possibly hold, I reckon, about 150 to 200 people. Would I be right in saying that?
Well, that depends.
Could you be persuaded?
That again is something that, you know, there's been a lot of feedback through the survey on that. Again, I agree. Is it where it needs to be? No.
The frustration for we, because we go elsewhere before a game, we don't poor choice of drink, single file queue. There's nothing. It's more like a school dinner hall than it is going for a pint before the game. It kind of, even the table arrangements, it makes it feel, it just kind of dilutes any sort of atmosphere.
Where, yeah.
I'm not saying that it has to be rowdy or anything, but even the slightly boisterous or atmospheric would do. You watch the football and kind of poor quality televisions. Not the tellies are poor quality, the pictures just crap. And it's so frustrating to see, and there's been a few occasions where, I think it was a Hearts game that went up for what I vowed to be the last time until I heard anything different about it changing, because it was just, it was so warm as well, just everything about it was just really poor, and it's kind of disappointing to see the club missing a trick, particularly there's a pub outside the ground just now that's been shut for 8 or 9 months. It would have been a real chance for the football club to almost kind of step in its head and get a few kind of steps ahead of it, and suddenly you realise, oh well, Fir Park, there is a pub there, and before you know it, you could be opening during the week, and if people could be using it to go and watch the Monday night football or the Champions League or whatever it is, and they just sit empty. It just seems like such a waste for what could be quite a good facility if it was used properly.
Yeah, I think there are, there is the desire, and again, we, I'm not a massive, I don't know, you're asking, so I'm not a massive fan of looking backwards, because I think if you look backwards, you can only go that way.
Yeah.
And I think what we have tried to do here, you know, especially with the survey, and through opening up avenues for people to talk to us, is just to try and listen to, you know, and prioritise the changes, because we could go and spend any money on improving that bar in a way that we think is right, without understanding what people want. It's wrong of us to do that. And I think, again, in you know, with Alan Burrows, he's now got a resource, or getting people in is a resource to, you know, to try and improve things. And again, nobody wants that bar to be empty on a match day. But is the bar going to be empty on a match day if it looks like a school canteen? Absolutely is. Yeah. And there are things that we need to do. You know, that place is going to open across the road. Is it going to be a threat to us? 100%. But that's then down to us to, you know, to look at what we've got on offer and to make improvements that make it a better place to come.
Yeah, and as Muddle supporters, my desire isn't to put money in the till of the electric bar or whatever place across the road, which I'll definitely not go to anyway. But the desire, if there was a pub available at the ground where I could have a nice beer, not kind of feel like I was back at school, and then I would certainly go, and I'm pretty sure, speaking on behalf of Jane Buster, who aren't here tonight, they would go as well, and a lot of our friends would go. It just seems like such a waste of a facility.
And we want people to come, and it's the same whether it be something on the terraces or in a bar around the ground. It's a case of, now we're at the stage now where we're going out there and we're canvassing for feedback, and from there we can prioritise, you know, and make those changes. It's another, you know, friend of mine within football, a guy, Julian Jenkins, he was at Cardiff, and he was very much of the belief that, you know, you can't open a restaurant until you've got the food right. And that's so true, and that's what we've got here. We want more people to come, but we're not going to go actively out and encourage those people in yet until we can correct things, until we can make them better. We need to make them better by talking to the people like yourself, like anyone else that's, you know, that's filled out the survey, that has given us the feedback that says, actually, do you know what, this is what we want. Because I could go and do something in there tomorrow and improve it, or go, look, it's improved, but it could be the complete opposite to what you guys want. And that's where we have to be clever and we have to listen. And that's, again, everything that Alan Burrows wants, is us to listen to your opinions, and if you want certain things in there, we can do it, then we need to go and do that. And that is the desire of the club, to, you know, to have that type of environment. Because is it as good as it could be up there? No. Are there things that we could be doing to make it better? Yes. But we have to listen to what people want first. And there have been little tweaks that we've made over the last couple of weeks that people have sort of said, things that, you know, little easy wins that we have made. And, like, you know, we didn't serve food up until kickoff. We stopped serving about half one, I think, before, which is a strange decision.
Yeah.
But, you know, Alan has enforced a change now to make sure that we are serving food up until kickoff, because that serves us better. And that's not going to get us another 500 punters, I get that, or make it less like a school canteen. In fact, it makes it more like a school canteen, because you can get food in there now.
but you know exactly what I mean. It's seen kind of, I know, possibly the logistics, and I'm kind of wary of the fact that I don't want it to be kind of my survey response dictated to you over the course of a podcast, but the kind of fan zone experience where supporters can kind of congregate, and I know that it would be impossible to do it in Fir Park Street and just erect a big tent, but something kind of along these lines in an indoor facility, because there is space there to have people along and enjoy. But I think they missed a trick. I think they have missed a trick for many years. But as you say, looking forward, I think there's kind of some simplistic things that could be done, and then kind of working with the right people. There's the guy we know very well, Matthew Grant, that's come on many times, works in the pub trade, and he's spoken to guys like Ian McCaskill. Any time we've done an event, here recently has been brilliant, so interesting to see how he can do it better and everything else.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that gets you on board, the kind of almost an interest that and a desire to be better. And
yeah.
With and that, you just can't fault it.
I was fortunate enough a couple of seasons ago to go to Man City to watch, when Leicester were playing there. And I walked, I don't know if have you ever been to the Etihad on a match, which is, it's the most ludicrous, for someone like me, it's absolute utopia, because you go there, you know, the players park at the training ground, their cars are collected and driven to an underground car park under the stadium, so they can all arrive on a bus, so the bus arriving is the start of the match day experience. They get within 30 seconds of the stadium, and What's the Story, Morning Glory plays out of every single tunnel we go in, and that's the beginning. All the players are you know, welcomed off. They then have the mascots doing a little dance and interacting with all the players, and then they go off. There's bands playing, there's tent, you know, you can go and get food. They have a big Q&A on a big screen. They have everything. It's unbelievable. And while we're never going to get to that level anytime soon, everything like that is scalable, 100%, and that's where we do have to be clever. And can we do things that make it better? Yes, we 100% can. But again, it's just about managing expectations on what we can do. That might be, you know, little things like we're putting up new signs around the ground so people know where to go. Now, again, that's not going to attract loads more people. It makes it better for the people that are coming. That maybe, you know, little things like that can make a difference. And I think that's what we are trying to build, because that Man City model is 100% perfect. It's very American, but it works. And that's where we need to get to. And would I like to have something like that here? 100%, because we want fans to get here early. We want fans to be buying their drinks, buying their food, or just getting here early for every single reason. But it's not just about getting the money. It's we want people to enjoy being here. We want people to get here, you know, get here earlier. Things, there isn't enough things for families to do when they're here. Our family maybe isn't the most welcoming at the moment, and that's something that we are working on, and something that people have fed back through that, you know, through the survey as well, about certain things that we can do, and making it a better place to come, which I know I keep saying ad nauseum probably, but that's what we have to do, and it's those little changes about making the little changes that can make a big difference on a match day. But we have to, I guess, to summarise all that, but we have to make it better for the people that are coming before we can attract other people.
Well, that's what I was actually going to ask. It's kind of what I took from that there was that, I guess, that those that are coming just now are the priority, because what I've talked about, the attendance is dropping and people falling away from the game for whatever reason. You don't want these 3,000 or 3,500 that are coming just now to fall away in the same manner. And
well, my role will literally be fan engagement, won't it? So,
yes. Yeah, I suppose that is the danger. What we'll do is we'll quickly go on and talk about the weekend's game, and then we'll also look back at Hearts at the weekend, which a 3-0 defeat possibly doesn't tell the whole story. 4 off the line, goals just at bad times, I suppose. You lose the first when we were in the game, we were competing well. The second followed quickly after it, and it's always an uphill task at Tynecastle. And then the 3-0 defeat, we just can't seem to string two results together, unfortunately, which is frustrating. And we're going into a big month now, 7 games over the month of December, Ryan, and some very tricky fixtures there, starting with a huge game on Saturday against a Celtic team that have looked pretty much untouchable over the course of the season.
Yeah, I think it's it is a big game, and I think it was nice that they won at the weekend, because it means that we don't necessarily get the backlash of the Champions League defeat or anything like that. But I think, you know, from a personal point of view, I'm quite looking forward to it, because it'll be the first time I've been involved with a game of that stature, and I think it's but yeah, I mean, obviously it's going to be, I'm going to sound like a football manager and not commit to anything now, but you know, very much so, yeah, you know, we go again. But But yeah, it's a tough. That is the noise, isn't it? It's that. Yeah, we know. But it will be a tough game, but equally, it's winnable. You know, Sky have come in because they know that, you know, we've turned them over in the past, and I think that's what you know, you have to hope, you know, if every single player on their team plays at their best, then it's massive. It makes the task a lot harder. But if players have an off day and we put in a performance, then there's no reason why you can't win that game.
There hasn't been any kind of convincing defeats since Mark McGee has returned at Fir Park. Celtic Park has been a completely different story, but I suppose he will take a wee bit of comfort from the fact the last game Celtic really had to work hard for their 2-0 victory at Celtic Park, and hoping that if we avoid losing an early goal, you just never know. I suppose anything can happen in the day. The early kickoffs when you're always a bit sluggish, it seems like the players get slightly knocked out of their rhythm. You just kind of hope that a few of them have an off day or virus before the game.
Yeah. I think preparations, you know, that's I don't, you know too much about those, but they'll prepare in a way that they, you know, they need to. They're all professionals, they've all been doing it for years, and they'll prepare as they need to. But I think, you know, I'm, as I said earlier, I'm a Leicester fan, so I believe anything can happen, and I think that's what most I think that's what the players will, you know, be believing, that they can beat them. Like, every team in this league is beatable, and that's probably the case in every single league. But I think, from our point of view, you can win those games. There's no reason you can't. And I think, you know, nobody thinks that, you know, Hambleton are going to get a result out of Hearts. No one, Aberdeen beat Rangers, then lose to Celtic, and, you know, play off against Celtic, and that's just the way the league is, I think. And yeah, we haven't had the best results, and you're still in sixth place, so there's one thing I have noticed since being here is teams win a couple of games and you're in the top three, you lose two or get two results and you're bottom of the league, and that's as ridiculous as it is, and it's totally topsy turvy.
I kind of had a look at the fixtures for the whole of the league over these kind of December into the winter break. The last games in Hogmanay, 7 games, but there's some winnable games there. Some very difficult games. A trip to Pittodrie, Aberdeen even at Fir Park will be a very difficult game. A trip to Inverness on the 28th.
Yeah.
Which we need like a hole in the head. That'll be a logistical nightmare for people to get to that one. But I think that while teams can, a couple of wins can put you up there, a couple of defeats could put you down there, quite feasibly could go into the Kilmarnock game, and that could look like on paper a relegation dogfight. It's important to pick up points from these perceived winnable games. I'm thinking Kilmarnock at Fir Park, Inverness away, Accies away, even Aberdeen at home, a team that kind of struggle and don't look forward to a trip to Fir Park. We've got to pick up some points and some momentum going into that break.
Yeah, and I think I'll put it back to supporters, and I think that's where the supporters can really help, I think, because you know technically every side has its advantages and disadvantages, and in certain positions players are always going to be stronger than their opponents in the opposite positions, and I think, but that's where the supporters could definitely help the club, I think. I mean, I've worked at clubs where where the managers come out and said after games that the support for the club, you know, has helped them get a point or 3 points, and I strongly believe that the supporters can't influence a referee, can influence a referee's decision, but you know, you can't tell when the referee's going to blow his whistle, you can't tell when he's going to give a dodgy free kick or for or against, you know, and you can't, you know, you can't, the fans can't help a, you know, a city that's missed in front of goal or whatever it may be, but they can have a massive effect on helping motivate the players, and it is a two-way thing. The players have to play and the fans have to help when they can, and I think that's one thing I have noticed here, is that the atmosphere is relatively, you know, the only I guess the only negative I've seen was when that third goal went in on that hot water gate night.
There's no paper towels either.
but Yeah, you'd gone by then. But you know, that's probably the only negative I've seen from the supporters, isn't it? And but you understand that. And but I think the supporters can have a massive say in, you know, in how the club, you know, in how the club perform or how the team perform. And that, you know, there is constantly noise here, and you know that is a good thing. And like I say, clubs won't like coming here. Teams won't like coming here for that reason. And
do you think things like last night and the fans turning out and meeting the players and kind of there was a very positive atmosphere about the place, as you said, despite the fact that we'd lost 3-0 at the weekend.
Yeah.
Does that sort of thing, do you think that maybe plays in the players' mind, knowing that the supporters are behind them? Like, I suppose there could have been in a few of the back of their minds that it was going to be a lynch mob last night, yeah. But of course it was anything but.
Torches burning outside. I think that does help. I think you know that the players hear what goes on the terrace as much as you and I do here. But I think fans get frustrated at results because obviously we want our team to win. You know, if our team won 5 every week, we'd want them to win 6. That's the way we are. That's what football does to you. It's ludicrous in some ways when you say, well, you've got a set of circumstances that you can't control that's going to determine your mood for the rest of the day, and it's ludicrous. But we can't help it because we're football fans. And I think things like that, like last night, you know, do help because I think there is a bond between the players and the supporters here. And again, and that's credit to the people that have been at this club a lot longer than I have, because they've helped build that, and because we do have that transparency, and. You know, but I guess it can, yeah, that can work against you, you know, in some ways because of that the way it is, I guess, quite tight knit. But equally, you know, things like that can only be things like last night can only be a positive, I think, and that's where I enjoy doing what I do because you do have access, you know, you do have access to the players, and you know, fans can, you know, literally reach out, you know, and touch the players, and I think the fans. I think the players know that, you know, the fans are on side, and there's not one of them that would ever go out there and not talk to a fan or not perform, you know, because of something a fan has said. Everyone goes out there to win every single game, and I think supporters know that.
Just finally on the football side of things, a pretty disappointing Scottish Cup draw for those of us that were hoping for a wee day out and a bit of a drink on the train when we were a trip to Ibrox, which will definitely throw back good memories for many of the last visit there, those that missed the league game at the start of the season anyway. But again, it's a tough ask, a tough start to the Scottish Cup campaign, but we talked about momentum. I suppose there couldn't be much more momentum than beating one of the perceived big two in advance in the Scottish Cup.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a positives and negatives, really. I think it's had a completely mixed response, and I think there are, you know, I saw teams in that cup draw that I personally, and this is me being a bloody Englishman moving up here and not knowing enough, but you know, teams, places that I've never even heard of. That the mechanic guys, I was like, what a tie that would be. Where are you even from?
You've obviously not played enough football manager and done organised your pre-season tours, have you?
I haven't for some time, no. But you know, the things like that is quite romantic, you know, to get. But it's, I think, from the club's point of view, I think if you're going to win the cup, you're going to have to play the big teams anyway. But, and I think from the, you know, the fans' point of view, I guess that, you know, there's a massive chance that that's going to be on Sky. It's going to be a big crowd, and I think from the club's point of view and the fans can rest assured that's probably a decent enough payday for the club as well. Not that the club wants to settle just for a payday and to lose a game, but you have to play every single team. You're going to face a big team at some point, and I don't think there's any negativity to that tie at any stage, really. But it's is it a romantic tie? Probably not. Is it a tie that the club can win? Yes. Is it a tie that's going to get the club a payday? Yes.
Well, yeah, that's immensely important to remember. They're not actually very good. They've scraped by many, many times. We should have at least taken a point at Ibrox earlier on in the season. The first 45 minutes of the League Cup tie, albeit it was when both teams were rusty, we absolutely battered them and should have been a few goals ahead before going on to lose the game. I know it sounds like kind of cliched excuses, but they aren't a good lot. So if we take some confidence in, who knows what will happen during the couple of weeks in January before that game.
Yeah, and I think as well, Motherwell are going to go into that as the underdogs, and there's nothing to lose. And I think they've got to play in front of their crowd that get on their backs when they're not winning 3-0 every week.
You saw it the other week. They scored the last minute goal against Dundee, and there was only about 20,000 left in the stadium because it all buggered off because it was boring and they were passing the ball too much.
And they've got that pressure on them. There's no pressure on Motherwell to go to that game. And I think that is a massive positive, and it is winnable. And I hope to see another video of Twist and Shout on YouTube that's 27 minutes long.
Could have stayed in there all night that night, that's for sure. But just kind of wrap things up by thanking everyone that attended the podcast quiz last night. That was greatly appreciated. Raised a good sum for the ladies' team, and it certainly will hopefully go some way to being used for their season in SPL2 next season. So thank you to everyone, including the players team who finished third, but there's a bit of steward's inquiry there given they had a fifth man, which was a bit controversial. James McFadden made a late appearance.
These are footballers.
Apparently that compensated for Richard Tate's performance, who didn't get a question in the whole night. But yeah, much appreciated. And there is still copies of the book as well, which have now reduced to £6, on the website and in the club shop as well. Ryan, thank you very much for your time tonight, mate.
It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next week. Until then, thank you and goodbye.